Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Addiction Audio Podcast. My name is Ben Scher and I'm delighted to be joined today by Dr. Caroline Copeland. Welcome.
Thank you, Ben.
So Dr. Copeland is a senior lecturer in pharmacology and toxicology at King's College London and is also the director of the National Programme on Substance Abuse Deaths. So today, Dr. Copeland is joining us to talk about a recent paper which her and her team have published in the Addictral Journal. So the paper is titled Broad Evidence of Xylazine in the UK Illicit Drug Market Beyond Heroin Supplies, Triangulating from Toxicology, Drug Testing and Law Enforcement. So there's a fair bit to unpack there. But before we dive into the paper, Dr. Copeland, I was just wondering if you could just tell us a bit about kind of your research and where your expertise lie.
Of course. So actually, we changed the name of the programme from the National Programme on Substance Abuse Deaths to the National Programme on Substance Use Mortality, but only about a week ago. So you're not...
Okay. No, great. Thank you for clarifying.
So we changed the name because of the negative connotations of the term abuse, which has it. And also, I never liked the SAD acronym part of it as well. So that program I've run now for coming up to 5 years, and that collates deaths related to drug use from coroners across England, Wales, and Northern Ireland. So my original training is as a neuropharmacologist. My PhD was in something entirely different. Electrophysiology and fluorescent microscopy, but still do with neuro work. And when I came across the database, it was under threat of closure, and I took it on. And I'm not a trained, formally trained epidemiologist, but in the past 5 years, I think I've managed to get myself up to speed as best as possible. So I apply my neuropharmacology knowledge to the interpretation of these case reports, and there's a whole host of things we do with this database to try and prevent future harms of drugs and drug-related death. One of those is surveilling the illicit drug market, which is what we've done here. We also inform and evaluate drug policy as well, so we report to local authority, Home Office, UN bodies that are interested in various emerging drugs in particular, and we evaluate things like the effectiveness of the Psychoactive Substances Act. And then we also work on trying to identify and inform various harm reduction methods as well. So they're sort of the three main things we do with the programme.
Okay, brilliant. And so this paper in particular, which you and your team have recently published, focuses specifically on xylazine. So why is xylazine being spoken about right now? Why is it getting so much attention in the media?
Oh, because it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. So the reason it's getting so much attention in the media is because of its status in the US. So it's becoming increasingly difficult to get heroin into the US market, predominantly via the Mexican border. And so the cartels and drug suppliers have had to come up with something else. And fentanyl is another strong opioid, stronger actually than heroin anyway itself, but it's much shorter acting, which is why it's used clinically, because that short acting is advantageous. But if you are a heroin user, a short acting opioid is not what you're expecting when you're thinking of buying heroin. And so drug sellers have been mixing the fentanyl with another sedative, and this is what xylazine is. It's a non-opioid, non-benzodiazepine sedative, and it's longer acting. And by putting the fentanyl and the xylazine together as like a cocktail, it's trying to recreate the heroin experience more closely. Now, xylazine's a sedative, and when you add additional sedatives together, that's just going to contribute to respiratory depression. And but in addition to that acute drug harm, the other really nasty thing that xylazine does is that it can cause blood vessels to contract, and our tissues need blood, the oxygen, the nutrients that the blood carries in order to survive. And if we're closing off those blood vessels, that tissue is going to die, and it's going to turn into sores on the skin. And if they get infected, it can lead to amputation. I was listening to a woman in the US who had detoxed from fentanyl xylazine dependence, and she said it was the worse than any heroin detox she'd ever done. And she also felt really lucky because when she was using, she had an access to a shower, so she was able to keep her sores clean and got to keep both of her arms. And I think that's just awful that she considers herself lucky in that regard. So xylazine, a rampant drug in the US in combination with fentanyl, to the point where it was declared in April last year in the US as an emerging threat to the United States. And but it hadn't been seen outside the US. Around about this time last year, we published the first case report of a death due to xylazine in the UK, which actually happened in May 2022. But because death investigations take so long with coroners, and then publishing the case report took a whole year to sort of get out there, which isn't particularly good for a public health timeline. And so what the team and I were trying to do with this piece was to see if, was that an isolated case, or is it more widespread? And one of the biggest problems was that there was only one tox lab at the time who was testing for xylazine in their standard screening protocols. And they were the ones that were picking it up. And we asked the tox labs to do retrospective screens to start adding it to their screens. And that's when it became very apparent very quickly that this was not an isolated case, and xylazine is present here in the UK as well.
So, looking at the methodology of your study, was it a question of kind of going through those toxicology reports and trying to pick out the xylazine cases, or was there any additional analysis that was done?
So normally with the database I run, we wait until conclusion of coronial inquest, and that's when we get reported the record of inquest, the toxicology, past medical history of decedents. But the fastest coronial jurisdiction in the country takes about 3 months to conclude deaths at inquest. Some places over 2 years, and we really felt we couldn't wait 2 years to do this, and that we needed to address if this drug was here sooner. And I've got to know a lot of the tox labs directly, and I asked them if they would go through their reports that of deaths that have happened pre-inquest, essentially, and report those to us. So a slightly different methodology from usual, but much quicker. And you'll actually see in the paper that some coroners, and it's understandable, they don't want the deaths being misinterpreted, didn't want details releasing as to where the death occurred, and sometimes the co-detected drugs as well. And that's because not all deaths where drugs are detected are due to drug use. For example, you could have someone who had used drugs, was then crossing the road and hit by a car. Their tox had come back as positive, but their death wouldn't have been due to the drugs, if that makes sense.
So
And that's why
you,
the coroner's a bit more careful with it.
okay, so you were purposefully trying to only pick out those deaths which were caused by xylazine, as opposed to ones where xylazine might have been involved.
So all deaths where it was either causative or just detected as well, because what we wanted to know was, is it here or not? I think it's a different debate as to whether or not it's causative in the death. But from a public health perspective, we need to know, are people going to be turning up with mixed overdoses that won't respond to naloxone or flumazenil if that ever gets used? And if they're turning up to health centres with these chronic skin ulcers, how can they be treated?
And so what did you and your team find? What were the results?
Well, the first case was not an isolated case, and I think we had, was it 16 other well, 16 total samples from human biological samples. So the majority of those were fatalities, but there were some non-fatal overdoses as well. And these have come from across the country. Now, in the US, it's often almost, well, to say almost exclusively found as an adulterant of heroin supplies. But what we saw in two of the cases was no evidence of a co-detected strong opioid, which would suggest that they weren't taking the xylazine as adulterated heroin, essentially. And one of the other sources of information that we looked at corroborated that not all of these deaths would have been in where heroin had been the drug of intended use, because by the time sort of we drew the line in the data collection of this study, there were no submissions to the drug testing facility Wedinos where xylazine had been detected, where heroin had been the purchase intent. They were all counterfeit tablets or had been sold as THC vapes. So not only is xylazine now here in the UK in a danger, but it's not something that is just going to be a problem for heroin users to be considering. This is much wider. There have since been submissions to Wedinos of heroin or where heroin was the purchase intent, where the xylazine was detected. But people that order counterfeit pills online, people that smoke THC vapes are also at risk.
These are obviously very, very important findings. But if there's any kind of policymakers, public health practitioners, kind of listening to this or reading the paper that's going to be published, what are the kind of the implications from a policy perspective? Do you have any recommendations that kind of come out of this research?
So at the moment, xylazine will be controlled under the Psychoactive Substances Act of 2016, which is a bit of policy which essentially says that any psychoactive drug is banned unless it's specifically licensed for human use. Now, the Psychoactive Substances Act, it's not an offence to possess a substance under these. It's not that the police will just let you have it. I think that they confiscate whatever items are from you, but you won't be prosecuted and potentially face a fine or a jail sentence. But it is still an offence to manufacture and supply under the Psychoactive Substances Act. And the ACMD actually released a document 10 or so days ago. To maybe 20 days ago, to government advising that the xylazine does get classified under the Misuse of Drugs Act. And that's the higher level of legislation where possession does become an offence. And the penalties for supply and manufacture are much higher than under the PSA. And I support its controlling under the Misuse of Drugs Act for the increased punitive measures for supply and manufacture. But I don't think it's actually going to make any difference as to whether that the possession component and the use component, because at the moment there is no suggestion that there is an active user market for xylazine. And in the people who have used it, they think that they're using something else. So I'm not quite sure whether the possession component of the MDA would ever come into considerable consideration because of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. We've seen obviously how devastating the spread of xylazine has been in the US, and now that it's being kind of picked up in these cases here, it is really quite scary. But what do you think the government can do, whether it's through legislation or otherwise, to try and stop the spread of xylazine or this kind of influx that we've been seeing recently? Is there anything that any measures that they can take to kind of slow it down or just kind of stop it fully?
Well, I think, 50 years or whatever we've had now of prohibitive drug policy and increasingly prohibitive drug policy, has shown that that is not going to stem the increase in drug use and drug-related deaths, which have just continued to rise at the same time. So, and we've seen with novel psychoactives, we're seeing with nitazenes, whereas the heroin supply is dwindling because the heroin crops are no longer being cultivated in Afghanistan, that there's always going to be the next drug that will come along. And the trend is for them to get stronger and more potent and more harmful as time goes along. And it's because they're easier to smuggle to circumvent the measures. So I don't think more punishment and putting more time and money and effort into trying to control the supply is where we need to be going. We need to be thinking about, well, how do we manage the demand? And the demand is from the drug users themselves. And I think, in an ideal world, there'd be more investment in treatment services, mental health services, to try and understand, why are these people using drugs in the first place? Many users of drugs that would contain xylazine, they're not doing it to have a good time recreationally and just get high. And they tend to be using because of some, awful circumstances that they're trying to deal with, or past trauma. And if they can be got the help that they need to actually address their drug use and why they're using the drugs in the first place, I think that's what we need to be looking at more.
Definitely. And in your answer there, you mentioned nitazenes, and amongst a few other synthetic drugs. And we've seen kind of the proliferation of those other sorts of drugs in addition to xylazine in the US as well. If there was to be that similar influx that the US has faced in a UK context, do you think that we are prepared as a country to deal with that sort of influx of synthetic drugs? Or do you think we're kind of lagging behind in those measures that need to be implemented?
Well, I think it's a very similar story to xylazine in terms of the nitazenes. These are super potent opioids, even more potent than fentanyl, that are being used to adulterate heroin supplies, which the data suggests are getting more and more dilute. The purity is just dropping. And the measures that we need to stop those. Again, it's the same thing. These drugs, one of the reasons why they are being used, well, shipped and manufactured, is that they're so strong. You can get thousands of doses in a little bag inside a greetings card. That's going to be almost impossible to intercept all of those entering the country. So again, it's going to be about how can we reduce the demand as opposed to just trying to address the supply.
Definitely. And Dr. Copeland, just to finish off here, what is next for this research, for this database, for you personally? What are kind of the next steps of with this work?
Well, me personally, I'm due to be on maternity leave in about 6 weeks. So
Congratulations.
that's looming on the horizon. But in terms of this research, we will obviously we want to continue monitoring the situation, seeing what types of drugs the xylazine is appearing in, and to promote these findings to the people that need to hear it, and do that type of engagement. In terms of the database, we've almost got all coroners reporting now. I think I've got a bunch of about eight to go, and then we'll be able to be producing sort of like countrywide reports. And on that note, if anyone wishes to have a look at NPSUM, the web page on King's College London, you'll be able to find that there is opportunity to request data from us. We aren't just collating it and using it for ourselves. We want this data to be used as widely as possible to try and prevent as much harm as can be done.
Brilliant. Well, Dr. Copeland, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.